Did you?
Okay, welcome to tonight's class. We are dedicating this class in memory of two special people. One is Anna's grandfather. What was his Hebrew name?
Moshe Aaron ben
Michael, who passed away this week at the ripe age of 97, Baruch Dynamis. And as well as we are commemorating the yahrzeit of Deborah's father, Joel. Deborah, what's his Hebrew name?
Shimshon Moshe ben Mordechai Bethava.
Shimshon Mordechai ben?
Shimshon Moshe ben Mordechai Bethava.
Shimshon Mordechai ben Shimshon Moshe ben
Shimshon Moshe ben Mordechai Bethava.
Okay. What year yahrzeit is this?
This is the 18th yahrzeit.
Okay, so there's no better zikaron. One of the idea of question, what does that dedication thing do? So if you're a Kabbalist or a modern Kabbalist, you'll say it's an Aliyas Neshama. If you're a non-Kabbalist, such as myself, which is a Zecher, we say Zecher, the Pasuk says Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the righteous memories for a blessing, which is that we do things, not that we're going to change their metaphysical state, but we're going to, not that they're going to have their soul elevated, we're going to use their memory to elevate our soul. Their impact upon the family and friends and community are such that we're going to do something special, learning, tzedakah, something that is going to be uplifting to the people to share, to sort of extend their legacy. What were they all about? What were their values? And if you want to have a Torah class in memory of a loved one, you're really saying that this is what they stood for. They would be proud about. This is something that they would stand up for. They would be happy about that. That reflected of their values. So we're looking for how tonight that our souls will be elevated in memory of these two wonderful people. Okay, we continue. Tonight's topic is our second class on tefillah. It's called Za'aka, crying out to Hashem. Okay, we're going to start with part of our curricular goals for in the senior fellowship is to do many things. One of which is to introduce you to significant thinkers specifically in the 19th and 20th century whose impact we feel today, but most people are unaware of that. Okay. In fact, I did not know this person so well, Rabbi Yoni Sachs. He taught me about this, and I learned for this class about this person, and we're going to, and a very fascinating person, we're going to share a video. His name is Rabbi Yisachar Shlomo Teich Tal, and we're going to go to the videotape. Here we go. Okay.
Orthodox rabbi. It was unfortunate.
Okay. Well, welcome everybody. Just join us from upstairs, from downstairs. Okay. Here we go. So this is a seminal figure, Rabbi Teich Tal. It'll be very obvious why we're learning about him tonight. Okay, here we go.
Enough to have lived in Budapest during the Nazi era was Rabbi Yisachar Teich Tal. At the beginning of the 20th century, he became alarmed by the political agenda of many Hungarian Jews who were caught up in the Zionist movement. Rabbi Teich Tal was one of some 250 rabbis who published a joint statement in 1936. It was addressed to the parents of many of the Jewish youth, who in those days began leaving traditional Jewish life in order to join the Chalutzim, or pioneers in Palestine, attempting to create a Zionist infrastructure in the land of Israel. The letter condemned them. Now, however, faced with the unspeakable suffering all around, Rabbi Teich Tal decided to present a counter-theology, a complete reversal of what he had previously argued. He began to write his own theological diary called Em Habanim Smecha, The Happy Mother of Children. In it, Rabbi Teich Tal likened God to a mother waiting for her children to come home. The first chapter is called Kol dodi dofek. The voice of my beloved is knocking. His purpose was to explain why these horrors perpetrated by the Nazis had come about. In his thinking, our beloved has been sending, as it were, voice messages across history, but the Jews have not listened. It is time, he argued, for the Jews to understand that history is the medium through which God speaks. Unfortunately, the Jewish people have made peace with their exile and have not awoken. Rabbi Teichtal writes, Libi er v'ani shena. My heart is awake, but I am asleep. His argument is that the overall view of Orthodox Jews toward redemption has been marked by passivity. Having convinced themselves to do nothing, only to wait for the Messiah, Jews have developed a quietistic theology. Moreover, the people have become convinced that exile has been a punishment from God. The belief is that God and only God will bring the Jews back to the land of Israel. Now, it is clear that this has been a fatal approach. By relying on divine initiative only, the Jews have shoved their own redemptive efforts under the rug of history. God has been waiting, as a mother waits for her children to come home. Rabbi Teichtal came to see, however, that the Jews have mistakenly fallen in love with their adoptive nations, their stepmothers. Having so thoroughly assimilated in the surrounding culture, they have forgotten their nationhood. He goes on to answer why many rabbis down through the ages never insisted that the land of Israel be resettled. They ask why the greatest sage, Maimonides, never included settling in the land of Israel in his list of 613 commandments of the Torah. Rabbi Teichtal answered that his reason was simply that settling the land was so essential that it did not need a separate commandment. Almost shamefully, Rabbi Teichtal reported that many of his fellow Orthodox Jews, Haredim, in Budapest and elsewhere, were out of touch with reality, living in their own Garden of Eden. Some Haredim, Teichtal noted, believed that they had been spared from all the trouble in Hungary because they had opposed Zionism. He wrote, it is clear that he who prepares prior to the Sabbath will eat on the Sabbath, Avodah Zarah 3a. And since the Haredim did not toil, they have absolutely no influence in the land of Israel. Those who toil and build have the influence, and they are the masters of the land. It is therefore no wonder that they are in control. Now, what will the Haredim say? I do not know if they will ever be able to vindicate themselves before the heavenly court for not participating in the movement to rebuild the land. Rabbi Teichtal was subject to harsh criticism for the arguments advanced in his book. He was even banned from certain synagogues as a result. Nonetheless, he issued a call for unity, arguing that it is only as a result of tension that dire situations can be remedied. It must be accepted that it is through conflict within oneself and others that redemption may come. As the Soviet army advanced through Poland in January 1945, the inmates of Auschwitz, including Rabbi Teichtal and his family, were transported deeper into Germany.
All right, this is a whole separate conversation. Okay. All right. Welcome, everybody. It's good to have such a big group tonight. I'm just going to show everybody, just so that everybody should see, everybody give a wave to everybody in Zoom land. All right. This is Rabbi Teichtal, which I'm about to introduce you tonight. Right. So he used he wrote this in 1943. He wrote the first chapter is called the Deed of Fake, which is from the book of Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs, which Rabbi Soloveitchik 10 years later post-Holocaust. He wrote this during the Holocaust. He's having this epiphany in Hungary. Hungary, as you, just to give a little bit of catch up, Hungary was spared the full wrath of the Holocaust until January 1944. And then the Nazis invaded. And then in June of 1944, there were 800,000 Jews. In the shortest amount of time, 565,000 Hungarian Jews were taken, transported to all the, you know, Bergen-Belsen, all the camps, and were killed. 70% extermination rate. But they thought that they were spared because they were not, you know, Poland had to deal with the Nazis from September 1939. And Lithuania, 1940-1941, they were spared till 1944. So they were under the belief that they had, they were really, you know, that they were. But he's, but right, Teichtal, who's a part of the Munkacs Hasidim. In other words, as you know, there's the Satmar Hasidim, or the Hasidim who live in that area of Hungary. That's where actually my father's family came from, the shtetl there. They're part of that Hasidic larger community, Carpathian Mountains. That's where the Baal Shem Tov comes originally. So just the, so that's really the heartland of Hasidic Jewry, many of them. Satmar, big name still in Williamsburg. And Munkacs Rebbe, who actually ironically my father was a Chavrusa with in Telz in 1955, back in the day. But he wasn't Hasidic. It's a whole story. They'll catch me on another time. I'll tell you that. 411 on that one. And he's, as he's, what did he do in 1936? What did he sign in 1936? You heard the video. What did he, what did he sign? What were the young people of Hungarian Jewry doing in the 1920s and 30s? Or were they making joining? What movement? What?
They're making Aliyah.
Right. They were becoming Zionists. They were becoming Chalutzim, which are the pioneers. Going to settle the land, okay? Now, if you join the Chalutzim, what does that mean about, what did that mean about observance 99% of the time?
Not a lot.
You know, it basically means this is your new Judaism. I'm now a Zionist, and I'm not observant at all. So he and 250 other rabbis signed that this is a terrible thing, and he was 100% opposed to Zionism. And then what does he do? Well, then he has an epiphany. He goes the opposite direction. Complete turnaround, 180 degrees. And he comes to the point that what? He says that, why are we having these tragedies? This is a, what we call, you know, there's, this is a part of a video. You can watch the whole video. I send you out the link. Of different responses to the Holocaust. Called, there's a category of thought called Holocaust theology, which is not just, why did bad things happen to good people, to the Jewish people? Or why did the Holocaust happen to the Jewish people? So he is one response, what's happening within the, not post-Holocaust. There's a whole body of thought, called Kol Dodi Dofek, is Rabbi Soloveitchik's response, 1953-54. This is right, Teichtal, 1943. He's looking at Europe, his brothers and sisters just over the border, who he knows are being put into slave labor, who he knows are being taken to gas chambers. The secret's out if you're in Europe. There's no secret. They're just, because of the political situation of the Hungarian government, they are shielded, they think, forever, but they got like a 2-3 year reprieve. Anyways, yeah.
It just seems very little similar to Theodore Herzl, who had the complete transformation in his thought as well, when he was something that happened in Paris, you know, the same idea.
I want to share an outstanding observation. We mentioned in classes past that maybe two classes ago, three, well, a month ago, that Theodor Herzl, who was a ardent secularist, and his solution to anti-Semitism was complete assimilation. We'll join him. We'll get all the Jewish babies baptized in one day. We'll all become Lutheran. That was his solution. That was his initial. Okay, which there's a logic to that. If you can't beat them, join them. They're not going to beat up their own kind, so he thought. And then, of course, there was a Dreyfus affair, and you could be the most secular Jew, you're still a Jew, and they hate you. And that's it. And then he, and a person with very little Jewish knowledge, starts to create that we have to have we need to have a homeland, we have to have sovereignty, we have to have autonomy, and that was the launching of the modern Zionist movement. Right? Teichtel is saying, he's putting from a Torah perspective. He's saying, how does God communicate? Through history. There's a problem. Hashem's talking, we're not listening. What is he do? What is, and he's got, and you understand how radical this is. This is, of the anti-Zionists, most, you know, fervently Orthodox people were anti-Zionists before the war. That was because the Zionists were people who were previously observant, and then become Zionists, become completely not observant. There wasn't yet what they call a very, there was very small Mizrahi, which is what we call religious Zionism. He is a major, in a certain sense, a religious Zionist thinker. He writes his book, Eim HaBanim Smecha, where he articulates, as the video shared, we're essentially saying that God has spoken, that you have to not wait for God to bail you out, lift you up, and transport you to your sofa in your new apartment in Yerushalayim. No, that's not how Hashem operates. You need to partner with him. You need to join together in a redemption. And he's starting to go, he's sharing this book out. He's going to, she's on tour, all the schools in Hungary, okay? It's still not, the Nazis not showed up. We got to get out. We got to work together. You know, he says, I made a mistake. I made a mistake. I'm doing tshuva. And there's tshuva for a small thing. There's tshuva for a big thing. This is a tshuva for a big thing. My whole worldview about that we took a very passive, or to use a fancy word, a quietistic philosophy, basically passive, God will take care of us, the end. That was a mistake. That's it. And we got to go. But as you saw the last scene, he never got to go. Because the Nazis came, and unfortunately he was murdered. But his writings essentially added many people who then, after the war, became part of the, in Israel, became the Mizrahi movement, the religious Zion movement, were people who were from him. We read, I don't know if you remember, I introduced you to a person called Rabbi Yehuda Amital, who was the founder of Gush Etzion. He's from this, grew up in this kind of Hasidic world. But he became, either consciously or unconsciously, came to the same, he survived the Holocaust, and he came to Israel in a similar, but with a, what they call a, we have to take active role. And he was in 1948, went to the army, and he believed that a Jew has to be a learner, earner, fighter. Learner, earner, fighter. You got to be a partner with Hashem fully and take care of yourself in a difficult world. You got to make yourself a living. You got to learn Torah in a significant and substantive way, part of your life on a regular daily basis, ideally. And you got to organize a state that's going to preserve the Jewish people. That's what you got to do. That's right, Teichtel's message. So I'm now just going to share a couple of questions.
What is it, like, organizes a space? Is that like a kosher home?
Like, say it again. What do you mean? Expand your question.
When it says you need to like find a place, like is it referring to a kosher home or synagogue?
What do you mean by he's talking about the land of Israel. He's not talking limited on the personal level. He's talking about on the national level. We as the Jewish people have to take the initiative to do everything you can pragmatically to settle the land of Israel. This is 5 years before the founding of the nation, founding the state of Israel. The Jews who are in Palestine who are involved in the Zionist movement. We're 90% secular Jews. A secular Jew in 1945 means that I grew up observant, and now I have a new religion called Zionism. In other words, I went to Cheder. My parents, I observed all the Judaism, but now I'm having sort of that's the Shtetl Judaism. I want the new Judaism. And right, Teichtel saying that God, body as a mother, is waiting for us, and we've ignored her. And rather, we fall in love with the stepmoms, or the stepmoms, the other countries. Whereas a Jew likes Miami Beach. A Jew likes New York City. A Jew likes L.A. Yerushalayim's nice to visit.
Las Vegas.
Viva Las Vegas! All right, Alan. Okay.
I have a question. Just when it comes to the state of Israel, I mean, I get, you know, the need to inherit the land, but the Israeli government is, for all intents and purposes, a secular government. So how does that play into today?
So Alan, great question. That's a whole topic in his own right. I'll just answer that. He pointed the figure, says, he said on one of the quotes from Imam Banin Smecha, he says, the Haredim, all the religious rabbis, are going to have to answer Hashem in the heavenly court that they didn't do, they fell short. Now he's admitting he was one of the co-signers of the anti-Zionistic proclamation in Hungary. But the bottom line is he did tshuva. It was a theological tshuva. He had an awakening, an epiphany. Okay, that's what happened to him. And now he's like, he literally went the other direction.
Okay? Right, because if there was more of the Haredi involved in the Zionist movement, maybe Israel wouldn't be a secular nation.
So first of all, Israel is not, so to say Israel is a secular state is not accurate. It's not really a secular state. What do I mean by that? The calendar is the Jewish calendar. The Israeli army, kashrut. Billions of dollars, not shekelim, billions of dollars by the state of Israel supports Torah education for everybody who wants it in the state of Israel. And all the entire country shuts down. First of all, even on Shabbat, you feel, as anybody who's spent a year or many months in Israel, you don't just observe the Jewish calendar in Israel, you feel the Jewish calendar. The Jewish calendar is not a calendar. Like on my Outlook calendar, I have my work calendar and I click on keep going. Whoop, whoop. Oh, what time is candlelight? Okay. In Israel, when is your day off? It's Shabbos. They also add their Sunday is called now Friday. Prepare for Shabbos. That's it. Not us. We're living in Goyville. And the truth is what Rabbi Teichtel is pointing the figure at us saying, and we love it. And if we're honest, we do love it. We're having the insomnia cookies. We got four varieties of hot chocolate. We got oat milk. We got whipped cream. I mean, we're living the right life. We're, as he says, we're living in our Gan Eden bubble. It's true. You know? Now, okay, so I'm not going to, we could have a separate conversation of, because they're different. He's saying that Hashem is telling us everybody must settle in the land of Israel. So that itself is an interesting thesis statement, which is worthy of a class of its own right. I'm using him as an example of tefillah and breakthrough. Okay, that's really our point. Because I don't want to. There's so much here. I just want to limit. We can't talk about everything. True. Okay, so correct. Yes, there are many biblical he quoted the pasuk from Shir HaShirim. My heart is awake, but I am asleep. Okay, again, I'm not, the goal here is not for me by channeling the voice of Rabbi Teichtel to give you a big aliyah guilt trip. Okay. So if you felt it.
Wait, that's not the class?
No. You might feel that. And by the way, and I'm not saying he's wrong. I don't want to, that's a topic in its own right. I'm taking in our short time together is he is a person from this perspective is going to help us understand the part in the Chumash, but we're going to remember, we start with a contemporary, bring into the Torah, and then we bring it to an application to our lives. That's generally our motif, okay? I'm introduced to a new person, a new guy, I write my Teichtel, I got you, I understand you, I hear you, you're making me feel guilty, I don't want to think about you too much, okay, all right? Okay, this is a good question. So that's a good question. Okay, good stuff. obviously I opened up the door, the Pandora box, and we got questions here. I got Daphne, good question. That's juicy. I want to honor that question, but I'm going to take it. I'm folding it up, tuck it into my jacket, and we're going to revisit that when you tell me to. Okay, let's go.
What was the question?
So, of course, Daphne, in her nimble way, says, well, let's say all the Jews would listen to Rabbi Teichdel now, and they would all move to Israel. What would be the implications? And the answer is a lot. Okay, so let's just, there's
Daphne
a lot. There's
has such good questions.
She does.
That Daphne.
That's it. Okay, so, just very simply, I'm going to ask this question before he answers it in a second. What chet, i.e. sin, did Rabbi Teichdel identify as a root cause of Jewish misery in Europe and throughout the world? Not negligence. Well, specific. No, he's a chassid. He was a chassid. He did not give up his chassidic, worldview. He just one aspect of the chassidic worldview he let go. What did he maintain as a chet? What's a sin? And he's really saying, why are we being subject to the Nazi oppression? What's his answer? What's Rabbi Teichdel's answer? The radical answer. You like it, you cannot like it. Well, we'll just say what he said. What'd he say?
That we are just waiting for God to send Mashiach. We're not doing the work on ourselves or in our communities to help bring it about.
Dan Lastman, correct. And specifically, what will be a gesture of tshuva? One word answer. What would be the gesture of tshuva?
Aliyah.
What? Aliyah. That's it. Aliyah. We actually have one of our important members of the MG staff. Aliyah. That's it. So that's it. So that's it. So that's the truth. You want to say that you really heard God's voice? Do what you can to get to Israel. That's his position. Okay. Okay, so that's, we continue. All right, let's go now. All right, so just I want to keep on going here. Now, we read it on the screen here. I'm going to do a little share screen. One second, let me do a little share screen for everybody. Share screen time. Okay. So he quoted on the screen here, but I brought up, it is clear that he who prepared prior to Shabbos will eat on Shabbos. Okay? Hebrew is Misha Tarkber Erev Shabbos, Yochel B'Shabbos. Very simple. You want to have a Friday night dinner? You better start thinking about that Wednesday and Thursday, do a little shopping and cooking, or pulling up to a kosher marketplace around 2 o'clock and see what they got left and grab it into the basket and hit the old credit card, you know, and $97 later, you got Friday night dinner. Okay? And that's how we do it here on the Upper West Side. Shishin! Yeah. Not here, okay, I'm exaggerating, but only a little bit, really. Okay, all right. Okay, I continue. And since the Harim did not toil, they have absolutely no influence in the land of Israel. That's what he said. Those who toil and build have influence, and they are the masters of the land. It is, therefore, no wonder that they are in control. Now, what will Haredim say? I do not know if they'll be able to vindicate themselves before the heavenly court for not participating in the movement to rebuild the land. Okay. What deeper concept about the life of Torah is taught in the Talmudic statement, he who prepares prior to the Shabbos will eat on Shabbos? There's a general meta principle about all of Judaism that is being communicated in this passage of the Talmud. Okay, that's true. That's more that idea is brought up the idea of Zachor et Yom HaShabbos. Remember in the infinitive, like continuously remember Shabbos and keep it holy. That's from the Ten Commandments. Here it's saying he the one who prepares before Shabbos will eat on Shabbos, implying being that what? But if you do not prepare before Shabbos, you ain't eating.
It's more like you have to learn
and stuff like that. Well, it's true, but that's necessary, but insufficient. Is it that You could that would be taking it very metaphorically, like the day which is eternally Shabbos. But even let's move it more to this world perspective, Jamie, and then we're gonna go to Shoshana. That's it. Shoshana, you want to say a similar point, different point?
I was going to say, Daphne, like, kind of said it, that, like, it has to be intentional. You have to, like, intentionally have Shabbos, like, on your mind to get ready for, and it can't just be, like, incidental.
Correct. So I'm gonna take all your points into, because the people on Zoom can't hear you, because the mic does not extend out beyond. So, guys on Zoom, okay. I'm putting you guys up on the screen here. Everybody can see your Shane upon them. Those who are opting for the video option, and we love that. Okay, so Jamie pointed out that the sort of the general Torah message. Jamie Levy.
Things happen when you're not there, huh?
Give it away, Jamie. All right, the Jamie.
Hi, okay. Jamie Levy.
Hi,
okay. This is Jamie's first year in the senior fellowship. She was in the fellowship last year. Okay.
Welcome, Jamie.
Okay. Well, you know, not bad, January. All right, man. All right.
I'm catching on.
Okay, good. All right. So so Jamie pointed out that the message of the Torah is that basically a person has to partner with Hashem. Hashem cannot be passive. You want to have a good Shabbos meal? You got to plan. You got to cook. You got to shop. You got to cook. You got to do all the stuff. It ain't going to happen automatically. That's how Hashem operates. You're not just the days of the man that God is bringing a manna from heaven are over. That's it. We had a little time. That was it. Now you got to deliver. And as Jane points out, if you're doing your part, or the Hebrew word is, you're doing your hishtadlut, you're doing your efforts, Hashem will bless you, okay? What Shoshana brought on, don't ask me Shoshana, I'm going to pat you. Therefore, you cannot allow Shabbos to be incidental, okay? And I want to say, many guys who there are people in the Upper West Side, shall we say, who are not so intentional about their Shabbos, and they're hoping that, and they play what they call Shabbos lottery. Which basically, ooh, they do zero preparation, and they say, like, how can I crash and figure things out super last second as the sun is descending to make something for Shabbos, okay? The opposite of he who prepares before Shabbos will have a Shabbos. So Shoshana says intentionality, okay? Intentionality. And Daphne said that point. Right. The answer is no. And you could say, as the Talmud in Avodah Zarah 3a says, he who prepares before Shabbos will eat on Shabbos. But then, all right, you can throw them a bone. I'm not saying not to be Rahman, but in other words, but just as Aliyah, who knows that we at MG for many years, we've had people who are dedicated to Shabbos hospitality. In other words, trying to make people have a Shabbos experience here on the Upper West Side. And there are rules, because basically people are putzes and they will be abusive. Oh, like they'll be calling up, hey, Rabbi, anyway, I can squeeze on him, hey, roof, Shabbos afternoon. You know, it's like 4 o'clock, air shop. You know what I mean? Shabbos candlelighting is in like, 32 minutes, okay? Dude. Okay, we continue on. Okay, we got it. Okay, this is a night of digressions. Okay, we're having a good time here. All right. Okay, so we get to the little part here. Max, read out, because everybody can hear your voice, because you're being broadcasted out of the TV. New oppression. This is bad. This is the Jewish people are in slavery. Read out chapter 2, verse 23. Take it away.
2:23. A long time then passed, and the king of Egypt died. The Israelites were still groaning because of their subjugation. When they cried out because of their slavery, their pleas went up before God. God heard their groans, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God saw the Israelites in Hashem related Vayeda.
Right. Okay, so
Vayeda.
Right. Okay, Vayeda. Good. Okay, so the Rambam's son, Rav Avram, has some comments about what's going on here. Yeah, take it away. They groaned.
Am I groaning?
Go on. Keep on going.
Okay. They groaned. They were in pain and sad because of the great difficulty of the slavery. This was intensified because after this wicked king died, another wicked king took his place. There was no salvation or respite from the oppression. They cried out. This crying refers to Zaka form of cry out to Phila, to God, to the God. It was if they grabbed an opportune time after the death of the king and received a little respite in their labors that they used to gather to pray as a community. Their groans. These Jews have a lot of sorus. Their groans, deathly groans, as in the type one hears when people are crying from intense pain. Their prayers were accepted, as the verse in Psalm says, quote, a broken and contrite heart, God, you will not despise, unquote.
Okay, good. All right, so basically, the Jews were in Egypt. They're having they were enduring the slavery. Paro dies. What was their thought? What were they hoping to happen? A nice hail come and help them. And basically, that this regime was due to this evil king. But that was his administration. The next administration will be better. And lo and behold, a new administration arises, a new Paro. And what happens? It's the same bad. He maintains the policy. He does not change the policies. The Jews are devastated. So, according to Rabbi Teich Tal, in what way did the Jews in Egypt share the same sin or hate of the diaspora?
They were waiting for someone to come and help. They weren't doing any action on their own.
Exactly. They were completely passive. They basically were waiting for the situation to change. So hold on one second. We're going to get to that. Hold on. Good question. Verse 3. Now, obviously, this means that they can now gather to fight the Egyptian oppressors. But notice, they did change. There was a radical change in their own perspective. What was the change? Yes. Before, they were non-dominers. They accepted the situation. They viewed the situation as being monolithic, not changing. There's nothing to be done. Right, but notice when the first administration was present, they felt they were going to wait it out. We as Jews, and since that time has been a thing, there are pogroms now, but the czar will die and we'll get something better. Many people, when they were people in Poland, there are very interesting stories. They were the Nazis were coming in from the West, the Soviet Union were coming in from the East. You're a Jew, you got an hour to choose. They're both bad. Where do you go? And historically, you know, the Soviets were worse. The German army, the German prior World War I, they were bad, but they were not as aggressive because in the communist regime, many Jews were killed. So many Jews they ran toward the Russians, the Germans, because they thought that's going to be better. They wouldn't believe. They knew it was going to be good, but they thought that the Soviets were going to be things. They thought they're going to wait it out. And then they realized that Egypt is not changing. And therefore, they recognize that they need a divine help. And their hishtadlus is that you're right. They can't put together an army, but they basically felt that God was not really a part, basically divorced from their life. Our life sucks, and that's it. And what's their situation? We got to wait it out. Got to wait it out. And they had a break. They said, no, that's a lack. And they davened. And Hashem heard them. And then there was, and then the next scene is Moshe is then called upon to be the Redeemer. We'll get to that in the weeks to come. Okay. So, because part of Hishtadlut, part of doing something is Tefillah, because God has shown man Tefillah. God is, he lives here Tefillah. We said you don't do that. You don't rely on that exclusively, but that's part of a, but it was part of a change of, we need to recognize that being passive and hoping the situation is going to magically change is not the way to go. Okay. So let me just going to go, keep on going down. And Zaka is a cry, which is when you are in an absolutely dire situation. Zaka is a certain kind of tefillah. It's not your daily tefillah. It's basically when a person encounters great difficulties. You're feeling helpless, hopeless, and hapless. You're dealing with a medical situation. You're dealing with financial sorrow. You know, you're being rocked. Okay? It's when basically when people typically naturally daven. The other time people will not feel good on davening, but that's when people, you know, that's when people daven is when, like, you know, I will get text when, Rabbi, I'm going to surgery. So I don't know when they daven the other one, but I just see a tremendous interest in tefillah. Suddenly becomes, interested in the time of when people are challenged. Okay, so let me just.
They want you to pray for them? Why are they texting you?
I assume they should daven themselves, but I'll include them in my tefillahs as well. There is an idea of we mentioned last week, we can have a impromptu tefillah of the Yiratzo, and you certainly can pray for your friend. That's part of your needs. You want your friend to be successful. You want a person to have health. You want them to have well-being. You want them to have happiness. That's a legitimate request. Okay? Now, again, the same way, right? Teichtel says, if the Jews of the diaspora would just simply daven that God should bring the redemption, that's exactly the problem. Being purely passive, that's not how Hashem operates. You gotta partner with Hashem, as the way Jamie said. That's it. Okay. Let's. In fact, when a person davens in a time of travail, it's a biblical obligation. So. Let's have Katie read it out. Rambam Laws of Fast, Chapter 1, Halacha 1.
It is a positive Torah commandment to cry out Zaka and to sound the trumpets in the event of any difficulty that arises which affects the community, as Numbers 10:9 states, when you go out to war against an enemy who attacks you and you sound the trumpets. This commandment is not restricted to such a limited scope. Rather, the intent is, whenever you are distressed by difficulties, for example, famine, plague, locusts, or the like, cry out to God because of them and sound the trumpets.
Right. So I think personally, daven that people who are suffering from COVID in the Jewish community and the world, we should have a Yeshua. That's something that should be in people's mind. That's not, there are people, right now we're being rocked by Omicron. Generally weaker, but as a guy who's had total of knocked out of commission for 13 days on my mild case, being triple vaxxed, shall we say, mild means you're not in a ventilator in the hospital. That's, you know, if you want to call that, if you're not that, so it's serious. And a lot of people who are struggling with that, and we want everybody to have a refuah shleima. So that's something should be on people's mind. And that's certainly a Zaka oriented tefillah. Okay, so there is a mitzvah from the Torah obligation when there is a communal tzara affecting the whole community, and even if you're having a personal tzara, it's just happening to you. And in life, the nature of life is there. You know, stuff happens. You may have read that bumper sticker, and it's true. Okay, and you need to and you need to daven for insight and inspiration and help, and that's it. And very clear, but not to the exclusion of not doing everything you can within your realm of sphere. I just want to make that very clear. And I get a scenario, because this is in honor of Scott Shapiro, who once I do scenarios, I can't go back. Okay, here we go. So he's a scenario king. All right. Joe MG has received 3 shots of Moderna and wears a mask in public settings. Contracted COVID. After seeing the doctor, he felt he should daven for good health. What type of prayer should he do? So, number one. Okay, so let's talk about what should you do? Where, well, first of all, What kind of, we talked about tefillah. Where should a person, where and how should a person daven? There are a couple options.
Okay, no poopy smells.
What?
Isn't right, there a section?
Oh, then we go to Shoshana. Yeah, and I'll go to Kate. You're next. Okay. Correct. So where should, but what? Okay, so what Shoshana said, ideally in a minyan, but yes, do not bring your COVID to the community, because that's not that profoundly uncool, and a Torah violation also. You know, we have a general rule, lo tam nal dan riach, you should not be a cause of danger to others. Okay, so but in your tefillah throughout the week, where would in what circumstance would you daven? So Katie, you get the next guest.
Isn't there a section within the Shemona Esrei for like personal prayer?
Yes, specifically. You're warm. First of all, you're correct. What?
Personal supplication.
Where?
Just before Modim, isn't it?
Okay, so all right, so what there's the general, the 13th, there, the Amidah, three sections: praise, request, thanks. Request, 13 brachos. 13th one is Shema Kolenu, hear our voice. You can put any in the middle of that Amidah thing, there's a little star, insert your own prayer. So you can ask for health for yourself, but you can also put it in the blessing for health. Right? And then you put in a year you can of course say it all in English. Insert the names, and then you complete. So you can put it in the formal Amidah. That's one choice. And what we learned last week, the year on song. You could just do which we mentioned is sort of like if the Amidah is the more formal musical presentation, you could do a tefillah improv, which is a short gesture of saying maybe your will Adonai, God or forefather, that you should send a speedy recovery to then mention the person's name. And you should do that because you're now linking it you're taking that personal affirmation and making it a tefillah that you are addressing to the creator of the universe. And not just the creator of the universe, when you say Eloheinu, you're talking about the creator of the universe who also has a covenant with his people, which gives us a sense of reality that there is a phenomenon of God not just hearing but responding to tefillah, because that's a key part of the covenant, okay? So number one is that he should daven for himself, others should daven for him as well, that he should be healed. And the question, next question, how is the fact that Hashem is a quote-unquote shomer tefillah, hear, listener of all prayer, a comfort? How is that a comfort?
I think however you say it, in whatever language you say it, you know that's listening.
Yes, because otherwise, if God is not a shomer tefillah, if there is no idea that God is a hearer of prayers, then basically you're talking to yourself. And then that's not so, that might be a psychological soothing activity, but there is no metaphysical reality to that. So the fact is that the foundational principle of the Tanakh is that there is a phenomenon of not, there is prayer, and then there is a listening of prayer, and there is even sometimes, not always, a answering of prayer. You know, we don't know when it's happening, but that's a foundational component of being a Jew. Okay, so that idea is a comfort, because if you feel that you're not alone trying to navigate the uncontrollable, and that doesn't mean that sometimes the answer is no. We don't get the insight into the divine calculus. It's not our. We don't get that, but the fact that it's possible is a comfort, and that's it. Yes, and then we go to another question. Yes, we love crazy questions. All right, Suzanne's got a crazy question. Okay. When you say praise for somebody's soul, be specific. What does that mean? Well, no, when you
somebody who's passed away, that's
That's an excellent question. That's really a class. That's really a class. Because let me just dip our toe, collective toe, into the water a teeny bit. Okay, just say, so we know that there's a prayer called Yizkor, which is a memorial prayer for the deceased. So that is, which was initially on Yom Kippur and then extended to the other holidays. So what does it mean to prayer for somebody who's passed on? Because are we saying that we have an effect on something? That itself is a whole, that's a robust topic. Okay. So that's a lot going on there. In general, we daven for people who are alive. That's in general, that's our tefillah, is to be able to heal people who are, in other words, you're not allowed to daven for somebody who's dead. It means, you know, he's not coming back. You know, we don't daven that person should have a tchias amesis. Okay. Not only that, you daven that it would not, even that, you're not doing what they call a tefillat shav, a purposeless prayer, which means that if there is absolute 100% consensus that this person is not coming back, you can't daven for a miracle. That's not right. No, we don't rely upon it. You don't ask Hashem for a miracle. And I'm just like, again, you could argue, well, we within the medical understanding, there's never if there was like 100%, you know what I'm saying? Or if there's a 99%, it's not going to make it. Then there's no time for tefillah. It's game over. There is a game over. So if it's within the realm of a medical possibility, but if it's going to be like, this would be a nace, okay? We will write, there'll be a new article written in the Harvard Medical School Journal about what occurred, that we don't dive for. Okay, but this is again, another. I don't want to get into these sidebar things. Juicy topics. Okay, last question. How would Rabbi Teichtel's notion of preparing for Shabbos impact the way Joe would prepare for his tefillah? There's davening and the preparing. What would Joe have to do in concert with his tefillah?
Look for a place to eat a Shabbos meal on Wednesday. Show up to shul with no place to go.
No, but we're talking about the guy, Joe, who has COVID. I'm saying. Not Joe. Not Joe the MGer who is not thinking about Shabbos till the sun starts going down on Friday afternoon. I'm not talking about that.
Well, Joe can place an order for food to be delivered.
Okay, so that's one aspect. But more intrinsically, he's got COVID. Come on, what's the basic hishtadlut the person has to do?
Wash your hands. Don't you wash your hands before you daven?
Yes.
Isn't
that,
okay, hold on, guys.
The things that you do to prepare to daven?
No. You go to the doctor and say, am I eligible for a monoclonal infusion? What medicines, antiviral medicines, or things that will mitigate the impact of my infection is available to me? That's called doing hishtalos, okay? First, you deal what you can do medically, okay? That's, you must do that. That's a mitzvah. To shmartim es nafshecha sheichem od, to take care of your soul, your physical well-being, your spiritual well-being. You got to go to the doctor. And I want to make a point here. I'm going to be a little, to do what the majority of wise doctors say, not something that somebody on Signal 4 video, that there's certain vitamins you should take, which will negate COVID. You got to do what the majority of epidemiologists, virologists, medical practitioners of infectious disease say they should do. Are they omniscient? No. Are they still learning things new every day? Yes. But this is all you can do. We have a term in halacha called the rofe baki. There's a rofe, there's a doctor, and there's the expert doctor. And we call it a specialist. You need to get the best medical care that you can access. That is not a nice thing to do. You must do that. Your obligations, you are the guardian of your body. You need to take care of it. You're not a doctor. You need to get the best medical care you can get. So by the way, I'm going to go a little crazy here. you could have a situation which is the complexity. It might make sense to go to a place like the Mayo Clinic, where you'll go and you'll be speaking by various practitioners of different things. You got to go to, or if you have cancer, God forbid, you can go to Sloan Kettering, which has a very substantive oncology department with surveillance. They have all, in other words, you got to go, just you're not waltzing into the medicine center because you're lazy and you're going to get third rate medical care. You got to do the best you can. It's really, this is sort of like, take this seriously. On your way out of the thing, then you dive in because you did what you could do. They gave you, if you're going to CVS, you're picking up your prescriptions, you get your Z-Pack, let's get a bacterial infection, you're getting your zinc because that might work, might not work. You're doing whatever. You got your fruit smoothies going on there, whatever. You're taking your all the medicine that you can take, and you've got to daven. It's part of, that's doing your hishtadlut. Not just daven, basically what Rav Techtel is saying, basically the Jews of Europe, that they opened themselves up to being victimized by a terrible thing because they completely passive. Now that's a harsh criticism. You can argue back. Okay, I'm not going to get into that, but that's what he's saying. You like it, you don't like it, whatever. But his general meta point is what he's quoting from the Talmud is correct. We're not passive Jews. We're active. You got to take the wheel in your life. Let's say a person has suffering. What's the biggest people that suffer in America? Psychological disorder, anxiety. People suffer unnecessarily. They don't get the care they do. They push it off. They don't want to do it. I want to go to a therapist. I don't want to do it. I don't need it. Meanwhile, you're miserable. Why are you being miserable? It's Baal Tashkas. You're giving up years of your life of being miserable unnecessarily. The therapist can help you. Not a guarantee. They're good therapists. They're bad therapists. Okay. You got to do the best you can. You got to take control. The people who suffer unnecessarily, you got to refuah ta'nefesh. We say refuah ta'nefesh, then refuah ta'guf. What's refuah ta'nefesh? The health of your inner world. People suffer unnecessarily because they don't want to do it. There's resistance. And I know it's not easy and it could be embarrassing and it's expensive. Oh, there are 50 reasons not to do it. Other than you have one life to live, why should you be miserable? And you can't serve Hashem if you're sick. You can't serve Hashem if you're sick, whether you're psychologically sick or you're physically sick. We have to serve Hashem with joy. You can't serve Hashem joyfully if you're miserable. So my point is, if you know somebody this is an issue with, try to do a little intervention, help them along. Some people, it's the medical thing. They don't like to go, I don't go to doctors. I don't need to go to a doctor. I feel fine. I feel fine. Okay, meaning you're not fine. You're not fine. You're not fine. Okay? And does everybody have the not doctor guy? Okay, everybody's got the Mr. Not Doctor guy, okay? Got to get them to the doctor. They need to do it. Aleph. Then there's a person who says, I don't do therapy, stupid rabbi, waste of time. I have many calls. I encourage people to go therapy. I'm not always successful. I do my best. I'm fairly persuasive, not so effective. Okay. This the therapist, terrible, terrible. Okay. All right. So I'll send you another number, a different person. Rabbi Shalalam. Okay. Okay, or whatever. This applies to everything. So my point
is... That was a great Woody Allen, by the way.
Really? Okay. So the bottom line is that part of our hishtadlut, our prayer, is that if we have a challenging situation in our lives, we got to do everything we can. If it's medical, like Joe, go to the doctor, get the best medical care you can access. And you got done that your efforts are going to be blessed with success. And that's the Jewish way. And that's the basic. Questions, comments? Okay. Point made. Anna's got a question. All right. Okay.
We were talking about the and we said we don't do it on Shabbat, but isn't that the prayer right after you light candles? There's a song.
Yeah, it's very big.
It's very brief, but it's right. It's literally part of.
But is it asking for physical well-being or spiritual well-being?
It's spiritual.
Now you do that. We do on Shabbos. Yeah, we say El Kino Zeno Kad Sheni Mitzvah. You should sanctify your mitzvah. V'tein Kol Kino Mitzvah. Give us your portion in your Torah. V'tahir Li Bein Aladcha B'Mes. Purify our hearts. Serve you in truth. So we on Shabbos we ask for spiritual requests. We don't ask for physical material requests.
Who are these people?
Okay. By the way, it is Jamie, by the way. It is Jamie. I'm just going to put it over here.
Max, you really do know these people.
I do?
Yes.
Max, you're overdue. You got to come on down from Hudson, New York. I know it's gorgeous there because it is gorgeous.
Max, it's your fault, dude. We've been telling you to come back for like 2 years.
Come on down. All right.
I live in Las Vegas, and I've been.
All right, this is not a pile on Max part of the segment, but
it's a long 2 hours.
Hold on, Max. But would it be so difficult to visit?
Do you have something for me to nosh on when I get there?
If you show up, we're giving you the insomnia cookies. With the fruit, by the way, and Zahava, upgrade all of us here. We're now in Comfort Plus because she also brought with the dippable frosting because there wasn't enough sugar in the chocolate chip cookies. I wasn't yet in the diabetic coma, so I had to do a little scooping and wash it down with a double chocolate chip hot chocolate. So, all right. God. Anyway, so
you can handle that much lactose
as we talked about our health.
All right, but briefly to answer Jamie's great question, the Mishnah Berurah says something very interesting. It says, Shabbat hi milizog refuro krovalovo. Shabbos is not for crying out, but the healing will speedily come. So what is that? It's sort of like a weird compromise. Like you're not asking, you can't ask for our health. But it's common. So it's what they call a non-tefillah tefillah. So yeah. So it's a strange.
It's like leaving a voicemail.
Right. So we don't do a full request. It's some sort of, I don't know what kind of request it is. That's a good topic. I have to give it some more thought. If I think of something really sharp to say, I'll share it as a voice note. Last question, Shoshana, and then I'll take somebody from Zoom land. Yeah. Boy, everybody's bringing their A game today. Shoshana, I'll repeat the question for people on Zoom. Shoshana asked the following, again, difficult question. So where does your spiritual health and your physical, where does spiritual health and physical health, where does one end and the other one begin? Was that your question?
Yeah. Like
mental health, where does mental health end and spiritual health begin? Okay, so that's a great question.
What does that mean?
So I'm gonna try to articulate that. Let's say mental health means that are you as a person able to function in a stable, effective way? Can you do your daily agenda in a reasonable fashion, or are you impaired? You know, do you have OCD? Do you need to check the oven that it's on 50 times? Do you need to wash your hands 16 times? Do you have compulsions? Or can you function? Okay, every Jew is a little mishuga. That's just, by the way, just I just want to let you know that just being a Jew, that's not in the DSM-7. That's just, you're a Jew. So you're shtickle neurotic. That's baked in already. Okay, that's just the bottom line. So we're talking about that the level of the mental health issue, it impairs you from functioning. You can't get out of bed. You cannot go to work. Or you do various self-sabotaging activities that hold you back from being successful. That's a mental health. Then there's spiritual things is that I have issues. We had a class yesterday about issue on bragging. Let's say a person has to feel that they come to Shabbos Kiddush. When they go to them talking in the various circles around the Kiddush, they need to do a little what they call the humble brag. yeah, I got to go for a work thing in Cancun. So, you're name dropping, you're basically making sure everybody knows how amazing you are, which of course irritates everybody. Nobody wants to hear that. We talked about that last night. Check it out online. Anyway, so that's a spiritual. Let's say I have a narcissistic problem. I'm a person is I'm self-focused, self-absorbed. That's a spiritual illness. Spiritual illness. So that's a basic answer to your excellent question. One question on the Zoom people. I got to go teach the regular fellows, the junior class. All right, we good? All right, let's continue. All right, guys. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi Penny.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for coming. We got a beautiful to have everybody. It's very beautiful to have everybody together. Just to feel the sense of community, because I don't know. COVID's very isolating. It's very nice to feel people. Yeah. It's good. It's good. All right, we're having a love fest here, guys. We're sending love your way. There you go. Whatever that
means. Who's the weird blonde?